Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Welcome, viewers and listeners. I am Matt Michaels, and thank you for tuning in to the first ever Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting debate. Tonight, we'll be looking at one of the biggest questions in wrestling today. Is there a clear-cut better product between the WWE and AEW? Now, since the WWE is the giant of wrestling business, this debate will be reminiscent of the old Andre the Giant versus multiple competitors matches from back in the day. The pro-WWE side will be argued by one person. He has the first-hand company experience and has been a loyal fan of the WWE since he was a kid. He's a contributor to the Vegas Bad Boys podcast and our friend Travis, or as he's better known to his friends, Raven. Now, the pro-AEW side will be argued by a motley, or in this case, Moxley crew of AEW supporters. The host of According to Woods podcast, Adam Woods, former WWE 2K designer and motion captain director, Brian Williams, host of Glenn King's Mature Audiences Mayhem podcast, Glenn King, Minnesota's number one AEW fan, Jed Higgum, head of video at Grilling JR, 83 Weeks, The Arn Show, WHW Monday, and Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard, Mr. Steve Kaufman, and he's our very own AEW expert from the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting, Sin City Steve. Welcome, everyone. Here's how the debate will work. I'll ask...
I'd like to say thanks for having me on, since no one else wants to thank you for having them on. I truly appreciate your time. And as noted, I have brought this bag. It's my barf bag because I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot of stuff that's going to make me want to barf. So if you excuse the mature audience, you know, maybe you want to put up a warning that there may be some barfing going on. Because obviously, as he likes to say, barfing is good in WWE. It's good shit, pal, isn't it?
Oh, such good shit.
Is that a defense?
Okay, so here is how the debate will work. I'll ask a question to a specific person. You'll have 2 minutes to state your case. At the end of 2 minutes, the other side will be allowed a two-minute rebuttal. Any one person on Team AEW can take that rebuttal when you're called on. At the end of the two-minute rebuttal, there will be 3 minutes in which any of you can add your thoughts. There will be a total of 9 questions. At the end of the 9 questions, each person will be allowed a closing thought. Is everyone ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
All right, let's begin with question number 1. This goes to Jed. For years, the main complaint from fans has been the WWE develop new talent, but misuse that talent. How is AEW showing that they will do this any differently?
With their developmental talent? Is that the question, basically?
Developing new talent and pushing them like the WWE is accused of not doing.
Well, I guess first off, I see a lot of differences with the... they're putting a lot of people on top that are kind of in a... I guess you see a little bit of that in WWE, but more of a... The weight limit isn't so much. You know, they're pushing Darby Allin to the top. They're pushing a lot of these other talents. I'm seeing, you know, the developmental side. I see them working on something bigger and better with some of the people they have in, I think it was Georgia, where they're doing the academy and stuff like that, the Nightmare Academy, I think it's called. They're trying to get a system in place with that too, but I'm just seeing, just from the get-go, we saw a lot of talent just being pushed forward that you really wouldn't see in other organizations, probably to the level. I mean, my first thought was Darby Allin. There's a lot of others that just come to mind. The tag team division, how they're pushing that is a little bit stronger than I've seen in anywhere in wrestling with the different amount of talent that they have that they're going with. I'm just seeing a lot of, I guess it, in retrospect of where they were before they came to AEW, I'm seeing a lot of upward mobility with a lot of talent. I don't see any glass ceiling effect that's so prevalent in WWE. I don't see where there's a talent that's being like held down at this point. There's certainly some maybe could be used better. This person could be used better. That person, but I'm not seeing this glass ceiling effect. It's not. It's transparent. I guess I'd consider it an AEW where I just see that there's so much politics with WWE. I don't see the political mumbo jumbo with AEW, and I think that has a lot to do with the kind of the bottom line of things. So,
okay.
I mean, all in all, you know. Yeah,
that's 2 minutes. Travis, your response.
Well, I think it's an unfair assessment at this point because AEW does not have a school performance center, whatever you may want to call it. So until they can open up a training facility and have it fully functional for at least a year to 2 years, then we can start judging that aspect, because right now, I mean, they're just picking up the scraps off of the indies and they're not TV ready. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, according to journalists, some AEW talent is not available to work other indie promotions or so on. And AEW obviously didn't have house shows, so no one really got that extra time to, I guess, train, you know. They're just used for television once a week, and you know, I guess it'd be up to them to get training done during the week or so. But you know, they don't have a program where someone is signed, sent to a certain city for 2 years, learn all the fundamentals of wrestling, entertainment, television, camera angles, and so on. So you know, it's hard to say. Now, is it true? Do we see a lot of NXT talent do tremendous work in NXT for 2-3 years on NXT TV and TakeOver and have great stuff, and then they get caught up and then they're just, where the fuck are they? They debuted a month ago and now they're off TV for 3 months. We see that a lot, yes. You know, so why does it happen? I would probably say I feel some people in creative on WWE don't watch NXT. And then it's also a bigger roster that they have to try to get fit into. But at the same time, it's more TV time. So it seems like with more TV time, they should be able to fit them in somewhere. So I do agree that, you know, there are some questionable reasonings of talent not being used to their capacity once they're exactly called up from NXT.
Okay, the 3 minutes is open for this period on this topic. Anyone can start.
Hey, could I just give a quick example of how the WWE and AEW would be different in terms of developing people? If you look at Orange Cassidy, he's a gimmick guy, right? I mean, he's got that funny little thing. And if he was in WWE and the fans caught on fire with that, then they would just do it over and over again until it ran out and no one was interested. He would become Wade Barrett over there standing up there each week saying, "I'm afraid I've got some bad news." But in AEW, they're transitioning him right now. They know it. They've told him, look, your gimmick is going to get tiresome pretty quickly here. So that's why they did the press conference this week. They gave him his first opportunity to speak, and they're giving him some matches against Jericho, and they're trying to see if they've got something there beyond just the gimmick. To me, that's a big difference between AEW and WWE.
Anyone? It's a creative energy behind things. It's just night and day to me. I see a little better on NXT, of course, but compared to the main roster in AEW, the creative flow of things on the shows, the downtime isn't nearly as down compared to the other shows to me. So just my 2 cents on it.
I also think a character like Orange Cassidy is proof that there's the creative framework in AEW that people get to see an idea fully formed on TV and let the crowd decide whether or not it's good, which does not happen in the WWE.
Okay, but at the same time, you're saying the creative aspect is different. Of course it's different. AEW, you actually have, you know, and this is like, I'm totally open to acknowledging the flaws in WWE. Totally open. And AEW has people backstage who are actually former wrestlers who are writing their stuff, producing their stuff. I always thought it was funny in WWE where you would have Arn, Malenko, IRS, and, you know, many others as producers, and you would have someone from Days of Our Lives as the writer. Like, I think Arn and IRS should be the writers and have someone from Days of Our Lives as the producer. You know, it's like that, and that's something that's always confused me. You know, I mean, even as of this very moment, you can look on the corporate site and see that there are job openings for WWE creative. And but it's like it's weird on who they pick to be on creative as opposed to who's a producer. I think if they were open to reversing the roles as producer and writers, I think, you know, there would be a noticeable change.
So you're on the AEW side now?
Yes.
No.
Podcast over. We got it.
No,
thank you very much. Good night.
I'm open to acknowledging the flaws, and that's, I think a lot of stupid people don't want to understand that. I'm open to acknowledging the tons of flaws in WWE, and that was always my biggest issue, was why is Arn Anderson a producer? And for those of you who don't know what a producer is in WWE, like, you know, maybe you should learn, but it's not what you may think it is. It's something that's, you know, not going to say anyone could do it, but it's frustrating when you have someone as intelligent as Arn Anderson doing it, when I think Arn should be sitting on the creative team in the writing meetings, you know, and so forth like that.
While we're speaking WWE's dysfunction, I will mention that the writer actually has a bit more power in that situation than what Arn Anderson was, which was a road agent producer, that I think I agree with you where that role should be switched.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on to question number two. This is for Travis. With the WWE having decades to perfect its technical presentation, such as camera angles, sound, and technical direction, do you feel that AEW is producing the same production quality as the WWE?
No. Should I elaborate? Or
yeah, you've got 2 minutes.
You can watch the shows, and you can watch the shows and see that. You know what I mean? But at the same, like, this is more than a 2 minute answer, because it comes down to production. You know, I know I have a lot of friends who have worked World Series, Stanley Cups, Super Bowls as camera operators, and that have applied to WWE and not gotten hired, or watched WWE and or realized that they wouldn't know how to shoot wrestling. You know, so shooting wrestling is such a very unique, you know, job. It's almost like you have to be a fan to know what the wrestler's next move is, to understand how to shoot it. If Taker gets someone for a chokeslam, you need to understand that his next move is likely going to be the tombstone. WWE cameramen understand that, and I think that's why they've been there for so long. Now, AEW's issue, I don't know who their camera crew is. I believe it's with TNT Productions, which, you know, we can go back to WCW and notice how many, you know, technical issues they had with their camera shots and so on. So it's a longer answer than that, but I think that's the shortest I can give you. Okay. No, AEW is not on WWE's level. I don't think any secondary football league is going to steal a camera creation from AEW.
Okay, we'll open it up for a 3-minute rebuttal. Anyone can take it from Team AEW.
I'll step in on this one, if it's okay.
Yep.
It's not so much a rebuttal. I mean, look, you know, WWE's production is great. I mean, I don't think there's anyone, whether they were a former fan of WWE that was watching Raw and SmackDown that aren't now, I don't think they're not watching the product because of the production. Their production is fine. I mean, I didn't stop watching their product because I thought their production was too good. If anything, and this is a minor little gripe with their production, I think it's, for me, it's almost a little too polished, where, you know, a lot of the things can come off looking a little bit too, like antiseptic.
Yeah.
It's just too much gloss. So for me, you know, and again, now before we even started recording, we were talking about how, you know, WWE is less of a pro wrestling company. It's just, you know, a content, you know, creation company. I like pro wrestling. I like to watch my pro wrestling shot as close to a simulated sport as possible. I think for me, AEW does an above average job with that. Granted, early on in the first, you know, couple of months, you know, there were definitely some missed shots and all that, too many shots into the crowd. But I think since that time, they've addressed those early issues, and I just enjoy their presentation. For me, it's almost similar to how New Japan shoots their wrestling, where the wrestlers, they're not trying to work the hard cam. Like, the cameramen around the ring are doing their best to frame the action. When you watch WWE, and you can tell when a pin is about to happen, a finish, the guys are in their head trying to make sure that they're doing it in a way so that they're facing the hard cam all the time. And for me, that just comes across as like artificial, and I'm just not a big fan of that. But I mean, that aside, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hear and talk and say that. The only negative I can say about their production is that it's too high quality. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to sit here and say that they do a bad job with that. You know, if you like that, if that appeals to you, then great. You know, but again, like for me, like that's not a reason why I would watch or a reason why I would stop watching is their production.
But if the overall show creatively suffers because they're overproduced, I would argue that is a detriment to the WWE.
Floor is open.
Yeah, I guess just for me, that's just for me. That's not the case personally. For me, I think just their booking, their storylines, like everything else to me, like that is something that is I just couldn't take anymore.
I mean, if someone is saying that it's a detriment because their production is too top notch, that's fucking ridiculous. Because I think the same person would say, you know, oh, this Star Wars movie sucked because the production sucked. You know, it's like no one's going to be like, oh, the Star Wars movie just a little bit too wasn't that great because the production was so top notch. Like, your production has to be top notch. You're on USA and Fox. I mean, come on. Like, you got two networks that aren't going to have sloppy stuff. I mean, Fox Super Bowl, World Series. You know, I mean, you see any Yankee games on Fox looking like, you know, they're coming out of Boston Red Sox, you know, camp or something like that. You know, it's top notch, high def, 4K, whatever you want to call it. Like, you know, and yes, WWE matches are hard cam friendly because from day one, when you move to Florida, you know, you're taught about the hard cam. And
I'm aware.
And whether that's a plus or a negative, you know, I kind of think it's a plus. I kind of wished a lot of smaller schools around the country would teach indie wrestlers about, or their students about camera positioning, and, you know, teaching them about the hard cam, you know, because then they can come to a WWE trial or they can come to a AEW dark match, and at least if they suck in the ring, if they have camera presence, maybe the people who have power of signing someone says, hey, you know what, we can teach them in-ring stuff, but they've already got the camera presence down, so that's a huge plus.
Anyone else want to add to this?
I was just going to say, I think that at times the multiple camera cuts can be jarring, especially to casual viewers, maybe people that are just flipping through. And if they just happen to upon WWE Raw, for instance, and they see, you know, 47 camera cuts within a minute, I think that can be an issue for some people. Now, obviously, this is something that has become a Kevin Dunn staple, and something that you just come to expect with WWE programming, that you're going to have multiple camera cuts. You know, people can bitch about it and complain about it as much as they want. That's not going to change. So that's the only thing that I would say in terms of production. I think that if nothing else, COVID and the way that everything has transpired with that, without having fans in the stands, has been nothing but a help to AEW as far as being able to focus more so on the in-ring and be able to get that familiarity with the in-ring performers, as you had mentioned.
I'm glad you said that, Steve, because that leads us to our next question. The third question is going to go to Adam Woods. Adam, we are living in a time when COVID-19 has forced both companies to perform in an empty arena. Has the empty arena enhanced your enjoyment of AEW, and have they delivered a better empty arena product than WWE?
See, I actually don't think that the audience factors in my enjoyment of AEW or not, right? It's one of the, and I think that's also a testament to, you know, what they've been able to do in terms of their storytelling. You know, fans, no fans, you couldn't really tell a difference. Now, I know my compatriot is going to say, well, AEW is not drawing or whatever, but if you look at pre-COVID WWE, the house show circuit, they weren't drawing too well at all either in comparison, right? So with that all being said, they've actually taken a negative and turned it into a positive, because it's, I mean, if you watch WrestleMania or any of the, you know, pre-fan plexiglass, you know, offering of WWE programming, right? The most jarring thing is there was no fans, and they had to quickly, you know, learn how to adapt. And even it took the WWE, a billion-dollar corporation, literally weeks to kind of figure it out, like something isn't right. So with that all being said, you know, AEW in its development, and, you know, it's a product that can exist, fans or no fans. And I think in this kind of new normal situation that we're in the world's in, I think it makes them uniquely kind of situated to kind of break apart from the pack, away from Impact or New Japan or WWE, you know, in that sense. So what they've been able to do in less than 2 years' time, I mean, Impact hasn't even been able to do in nearly two decades, if not two decades.
Travis, would you like to respond?
I think the one thing AEW does is they look at the alternative to what WWE does. So obviously, you know, maybe it took two months of WWE television up and down the week, of just empty buildings. And, you know, it took what AEW, what, 2 weeks maybe or so to figure out, hey, we got people sitting backstage and catering. Let's just have them in the audience, just at least throwing some ambience and some booze and some cheers and so forth. And then, you know, WWE took the formula and did it their version. So, I mean, obviously both versions are different. WWE, you have the plexiglass and so on. AEW, you don't. I think it's funny that journalists will point out someone in the front row of WWE doesn't have their mask on or doesn't have it on properly or whatever aspect, and yet pictures from AEW come out of literally no one with the fucking mask on and everyone's radio silence. Ah, okay. Oh, well. Hope those AEW checks cash, Mr. Meltzer.
Okay, we'll open it up. Anyone have any thoughts on this?
Testing. the reason people were able to early on not necessarily wear masks in Jacksonville is Jacksonville was a big bubble. Not Jacksonville, the city.
This wasn't earlier on. This was as recent as 2 weeks ago.
Well, especially 2 weeks ago. Daly's Place is a bubble, a tested bubble. You have to get rapid tested to enter. And if we're going to talk about WWE's production during COVID, why can't we not talk about...
Why do they have masks on then at the shows? Why do they still wear a mask?
Because it's still safer to wear a mask.
And to not wear a mask, yeah.
And it's an optics thing. I agree with you. People should be wearing masks, especially if they're on national television. Definitely. But if you're going to bring up the fact if you're going to bring up mask wearing on wrestling, there's a need for a mask at the Performance Center.
If you're on national television, I mean, mask. I mean, it's like, why is it an option?
Why was it an option for WWE for so long until an outbreak happened? No, we can go there.
We can. I'm not going to answer that question.
Just saying, man.
You know, I think all wrestling without fans is a lesser product than it would be. I mean, that's just the reality. Yeah. Wrestlers need the fans to play off of to determine what's working and what's not. It's when wrestling's at its best, it's an interactive thing that revolves around the crowd. So
AEW needed the fans more than WWE has so far. only because they have had some very interesting signings, and it would have been really cool to see what the reactions would have been with these people making their debuts recently. So I think it kind of sucked. You know, like I said, I may not be a big fan of the product, but that doesn't mean I'm not a big fan of some of the people that have been signed. I would have loved to seen the fans' reaction to a Matt Hardy thing. I would have loved to seen the fans' reaction to Brody Lee. And, you know, I would have loved to seen the fans' reaction to the Revival. Obviously, I think when TV comes back with fans, I think that first episode is going to be kind of be their re-debuts. And that's going to be a powerful show, you know. And, you know, most likely it will go against, you know, whatever NXT can put out at that point, whether it's, you know, Halloween Havoc or, you know, World War III or Slamboree or Spring Stampede or wherever we're at in that point of the year. Great American Bash. That was an excellent episode, man. Keith Lee, Adam Cole. Whew. Speaking of Adam Cole, tell you what, that Pat McAfee angle is way better than Mike Tyson 2020 angle. I'm sure the moderator will get to that in a moment.
All right. Well, let's jump on to the next question. This is for you, Steve Kaufman. Except for a small handful of times, AEW has consistently defeated NXT in the head-to-head ratings. Those numbers are carried by the 18 to 49-year-old demographic. Why is AEW so popular with the younger viewers?
I think it starts with the TNT network, oddly enough, not being as popular as the network. Because, and I think anyone who's studying this would agree with me, that there's a certain number of people that are watching that were really just watching Chicago PD before it and then never changed the channel. And that's nothing against NXT's product so much as that's how TV ratings work. That TNT being the lesser known entity a year ago, they had to put in more work to get more people to tune in. And as someone who's this on the other side of 18 to 35, I don't actually know what they're doing to speak to younger viewers. But I know that it's working. And I think being the younger company on the lesser known network is the fire that's allowing AEW to do what they're doing and score 900 against AEW, or sorry, score 900 against NXT's, was it 7 or 8? 7?
Mm-hmm. Travis, would you like to respond?
900?
900,000, yeah.
That's not their average. Speak averages.
Okay.
Don't speak,
okay. Sorry.
Don't speak 1 week. You know, victory. Speak averages.
Sorry, they averaged
he was talking about the last episode. I don't think that's too much of a stretch. I mean, it's not like he's just pulling one 900,000 episode from like months ago. That was last week.
Okay, you know, but speak averages. 900 is not their average.
700 is the overall average of this.
Your numbers are so off, but you know, we use those numbers, 800, 700. Okay, that's fine. But you know, I find it funny how realistically this isn't even a WWE AEW issue. Like AEW is not even going against WWE; they're going against NXT. And yes, it's under the WWE umbrella, and the WWE logo is plastered all over us. And we all know we're all smart enough to figure this out. Hopefully Adam is. But, you know, it's like, what would AEW really do against Raw? What would they really do against SmackDown? You know, it's like, if I owned AEW, I sure hoped I was pulling 800, 900, hell, even a million against the third brand, the students. You know, it's like, they should be whooping their ass every week. You know, so it's like I'm always curious, you know, and what would happen, and will we ever get that day? Will we ever get that day? You know, I mean, obviously there's going to be an important, you know, episode of television coming up in a few weeks with AEW going, you know, literally head to head, or at least hour to hour for 1 hour against TakeOver, you know, a legit TakeOver, you know, what would have been the pay-per-view version of TakeOver. So that's going to be interesting in a couple weeks to see, you know, who hurts who in the ratings, you know.
Okay, anyone else want to jump in now? We got 3 minutes.
I just want to point out that I count as a WWE viewer in the ratings each week because I set my DVR like 5 or 6 years ago to record it, and I don't actually watch the show. I watch AEW, and I don't watch WWE. And I think there's a lot of people that would be in the same situation as me.
I thought he was going to count because he's over 60, but go ahead.
And I'll just speak to why I think, you know, because look, I'm not in that. I guess I am in the 18 to 49. I'm 41. But why I think the younger audience is more drawn to AEW, I think, is just because, I mean, overall, I mean, it goes back to the creative. I mean, it's just a fresher product. They're new. You know, a lot of the wrestlers that they push to the forefront are young comparative to the guys in the main events of WWE. And that's not a knock on the talents in WWE. I mean, I love Drew McIntyre. I've been a fan of his for years. But I think there is a discrepancy in the age. It's like in WWE, it's like when's the last time a 20-something was pushed in any meaningful big role? Like a lot of the guys in that upper echelon of the main event are, you know, guys that have been around for like the past 10, 12, 15 years. When in AEW, and guys like Darby Allin, a guy who, I mean, he definitely speaks to the youth. I mean, he speaks to me. That little motherfucker's just cool. You know, that, and the characters come across as like almost like more – they come across as more like real people.
Relatable
because it goes back to how creatively, you know, the fundamental difference between these products is that you've got one company, you've got a 74-year-old man who is dictating creative. And let's not beat around the bush. I don't give a shit what soap opera writers you've got, what agents you've got. Everything goes through him. Everything. I've seen it firsthand. I've been backstage at WWE multiple occasions, and I've seen Vince micromanage these people. It doesn't matter what they write. It's what he gives a shit about. If he doesn't like it, it's being changed. And on the other, you've got Tony Khan, who is, you know, spearheading creative, but is also getting input from, you know, the Malenkos and the Arn Andersons, Cody Rhodes. Like, it's a much more collaborative creative process. And they're letting these wrestlers, you know, whether they're young, all the wrestlers on their roster, just go out and be themselves. You know, and it just comes across as much more lively and spontaneous and, you know, almost like you really don't know what's going to happen. And in WWE, everything is just so perfect all the time. You know, everybody kind of comes across as like, you know, automatons, you know. I think that's kind of, you know, I've always found to be a negative of WWE and how they present their wrestlers is that they just don't come across as real people. Promos and their heavy scripting. It's like nobody talks like that, you know? So that's the, so I think for me, I think that's what's just, you know, grabbing all these younger cats and just enjoying the show. And it's just more entertaining, to be honest. You know, it's just more fast paced. So I don't know. I think that, you know, young, old, I mean, it's just, it's much more entertaining product overall.
I think
NXT. Like, I'm not sitting here, you know, throwing shade at NXT. For the longest time, I've always said NXT has been the best thing that WWE puts out on a weekly basis, their best product. So I'm not throwing shade at NXT. I still watch NXT from time to time, but AEW is my focus.
Definitely. I think that where AEW really has picked up a lot of steam is because they are portraying themselves as essentially counterculture. So for the longest time, you had this established brand in WWE that has been the standard. And now you have something that's come along to shake the standard to its core. And let's be real. We've talked about creative causing lapsed viewers. I was one of those viewers that tuned out of WWE programming for a long time before I started with the Vegas Bad Boys. And, you know, I would watch a pay-per-view here and there. I'd go to WrestleMania, that kind of stuff, because honestly, it became more about the surrounding events and seeing other cities than it did WrestleMania. WrestleMania was just the icing on the cake for me. And essentially what we're looking at now is we're seeing a huge shift in the way that people are speaking with their dollars and with their ratings, essentially, in this time where, you know, live event sales are non-existent. So I think that that's something that we all need to keep in mind is, you know, you're seeing a shift that will translate even more so once crowds come back to the arenas. And I think that we haven't felt the full impact of this change as of yet, but that's something that will come.
They're not going to shift that hard. You know, it's, yeah, WrestleMania the icing on the cake of the weekend. And it's been dubbed WrestleMania weekend for a reason, you know, and there's only one company ever that can put together an event where a lot of other major companies are going to want to tag along and jump on that weekend. And that's WrestleMania. You know, I don't think AEW could ever put on a show where it's going to attract as many people city as WrestleMania does, or it will attract as many indie promotions to that city to put on shows as WrestleMania does. And that's why WWE is so powerful, you know, because they have been able to just have cities bid for it like it's the Super Bowl, you know. And AEW may eventually become a great product for fans, and you know, they may do very, very well in ratings, more than they're doing now, but they'll never have a event or project yearly that can compare to WrestleMania.
Okay.
I mean WrestleMania as the atmosphere. It may not necessarily mean in-ring the event, but just the atmosphere of the whole week.
So let's move on to the next question, which kind of piggybacks off of this. Travis, this is for you. Many of the AEW fans look at Vince McMahon as the direct reason they don't enjoy or watch WWE anymore. Is he really a problem, or is Vince just a scapegoat to blame for the AEW fans' dislike of WWE?
I mean, wrestling is a young product. You know, someone's doing a running. It's a young product. Someone's audio is distracting me. But I think Vince is. I mean, we don't even have to look at AEW and WWE to realize that. You can look within.
As we were coming down Centinela, because we went all the way to Graphico, you know, Venice Boulevard, and we walked back.
I'm more interested in this audio here.
Where the hell is that coming from?
What the actual fuck's going on?
I don't even hear anything. What's going on?
Is someone here from Venice?
Yeah, someone is completely taking over the audio.
Someone has a lady in the background talking.
Maybe it's the little Antifa group or whatever, their retribution.
Retribution.
All right. So, yeah. So
that's better.
So yeah. I like I said, you don't
my
even have to
my
look
neighbor.
At,
sorry.
Yeah, you don't even have to look at AEW and WWE to see this. I mean, like I said, look how Vince runs WWE and look how Triple H runs NXT. And you can see there's a difference as far as, you know, audience. And it's a younger NXT crowd. I've been to many takeovers, many. And as I walk around the arena, I see a much, you know, younger audience, hipsterish audience, you may want to say, almost like if you've been to PWG shows out here in LA, almost that type of audience that will go to a takeover show. And then if there's a WWE event the next night, you know, I've heard fans, I've talked to fans at takeovers, and I'll be like, oh, are you coming tomorrow? And they're like, no, we just wanted to come check out takeover and stuff like that. You know, we have no interest. So I think, you know, Vince isn't in touch. I think a lot of people around him who have to answer to him a lot also aren't in touch, and they're too scared to admit it, you know. And I think that's a major issue with WWE at this aspect.
Anyone want to respond to from AEW side about Vince McMahon and how he affects the product?
I think it just shows in the product. I mean, I kind of have been looking back lately at the fact of the last year. You know, Vince had this grand idea to separate the brands and have different creative teams and all this kind of stuff. We've been there. We've done that. It's happened before. It's fallen to the wayside. Look what happened again. The creative teams are no longer. It's one big unit, it appears to be. We have a guy, Bruce Pritchard, who's just kind of going along with the flow of what Vince wants. It's showing in the product right now. I mean, I know we got the coronavirus stuff going on, but I don't have much hair on my head. But I pull my hair out of my head when I see these shows at the Performance Center these past couple weeks, especially where it's just like so formulaic. It's, well, it's, there's this little thing here, and then this leads to the match, the next segment, and so on and so forth. It's just so dull. And I can tell this week they were trying to get some new stuff going, and it was hit or miss. I thought the underground stuff, the concept is interesting. The execution wasn't there. The Pat McAfee angle I thought was great. You know, so there's some diamonds in the rough a bit, but generally I think Vince just is doesn't have the pulse of what people are looking for, and it's showing in the dwindling ratings, particularly on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, we're at a point now where now things are head-to-head with NXT's or AEW's demographics are legitimately competing with Raw's demographics, with SmackDown's demographics, and they're competing all right. So here we are. That's a testament to what's going on. And I think, like everything, it starts at the top. And if things aren't working, you got to look at the man on the top.
Yeah, when you look at the stadium stampede on AEW, like, there's the difference. If there's no Vince McMahon in AEW, the wrestlers came up with that on their own, mapped it out on their own, planned it on their own, and had full creative control. And it was a masterpiece. I mean, that's the benefit of not having a guy up at the top who's got his own, you know, way of doing things and is stubborn about it.
At the same time, the Stadium Stampede did have two executives in the match, so, you know, people talk about Hunter always being in matches and like, well, you know.
Yeah, but those executives didn't control the match. It was.
Oh, they definitely did.
You're calling Jericho an executive. He's not an executive, is he?
And these executives are still in their primes of their careers.
Yeah,
as well.
That was something I was going to mention, is there's an obvious age difference there, too.
For sure.
Yeah, there was a criticism of Triple H burying people in the prime of his career while he wasn't an executive yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'll just echo again. Like, it's Vince. It's Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is the problem in that company.
No,
creatively.
Saying it's not Vince. Like, I mean, this is a topic.
No, I'm just answering the question, brother. I'm just providing my input.
It's an answer that everyone fucking knows. Yes, it's Vince McMahon. Is he going to give up? No. Okay. Or have they talked to possible other ventures of selling? Yes, everyone knows. If you live in LA, you know what the fuck's going on. You know, let's not be dumb. We all know WrestleMania is not happening next year in LA, most likely. You know, there's a reason why those WrestleMania commercials are stopped airing. You know, and there's shit like going around in Fox. You know, they saw Disney by Fox, and that got them interested. But but is it going to happen? I don't think so. Like, because I think it's always going to be a McMahon project. You know,
I'm not just talking about WrestleMania. Like, the thing was, like, with WWE, what is the main problem?
WWE as a whole.
And the main problem is Vince McMahon is creative, and I think it's telling that I think it was Jed who mentioned the rate, the fall in the Raw ratings, SmackDown ratings. I think it's telling that in the midst of the pandemic, when everybody was forced to stay home, you know, both of those two shows saw some of their worst ratings declines in company history. When there was nothing else going on, no sports, no nothing, I think that's telling. Like, the shows are just not good. And yes, that falls directly at Vince's feet. He controls the creative. Everything goes through him.
Of course.
You know, he needs to get out of that position. And he needs to do it sooner rather than later.
But he's not. And no one's denying that it doesn't follow him. Like I'm sure there's some Twitter diehards who are stupid enough to say it's something else besides Vince, but you know, if you're smart, you know who it falls on, and we all know this. Like, but it's like, what do you really do when you have someone in that position that's not going to give it up? Steinbrenner didn't, Al Davis didn't, Jerry Jones isn't. So it's like, it's, and you look at that circle, you know,
you look at those franchises. Look at those.
Yes, exactly. Look at those franchises, and you know, that's, of course, there. A couple years ago, there may have been a better 9 starting roster player team than the Yankees. But the Steinbrenners were so, you know, same with Al Davis, like, oh, going to leave L.A., go back to Oakland, or going to leave Oakland. Like, you know, they're so stuck in their ways. You know, I'm sure Cowboys fans can tell you daily about their frustrations. You know, yesterday was Cowboys Day, you know, 8-8, you know, because that's usually their record, you know. So it's just like when you have something like that as a franchise, you know, I like to say, if we put it in sports terms, you know, Vince is more of a Jerry Jones, Steinbrenner, Al Davis, and AEW is almost like a Mark Cuban, you know.
Yeah, good analogy.
Someone who's younger and willing, open to see the change and see the future, not just the now, you know.
Let's move on to the next question, because the point's pretty much been made. This next question 6 for Glenn. Glenn, many AEW fans believe that Chris Jericho is the best wrestler in the business today. How important has he been to the initial success of AEW, and has signing numerous former WWE performers helped or hurt AEW?
I think Jericho has been a tremendous help to the company. I think they're a lot further along than they would have been without him. You know, because in the beginning he carried the company on his back for a little while with the title, but since then he's been trying to elevate other wrestlers, and he's not. I mean, it would not shock me to see him take a loss against Orange Cassidy at some point. He's making these guys look good, with the exception of Pineapple Pete, I think. And even Pineapple Pete, he elevated the guy. He gave him a match. He let him have a little bit of offense before he knocked him out. But, I mean, I think Jericho has that unique ability to really take it. He's really a perfect fit for this situation, right? I mean, he is a guy who does not need writers. He doesn't need any kind of special gimmick that somebody comes up with for him. You know, if you just told him, Jericho, do your own show each week, pick your own wrestlers out, he'd put on an unbelievable bit of entertainment each week. So I think it's just amazing that he's been able to get that, or they've been able to get such a perfect resource for a brand new company. In terms of the other WWE wrestlers that have come on board, I mean, Moxley has been a huge, great fit, I think. But I'm not a fan of FTR. I don't see yet that they've added any value at all to the show, other than, you know, there were some fans that wanted to see them. But, I mean, have they really come up with anything yet that makes them stand out? I don't see it yet. But, you know, but yeah, obviously Cody's fantastic. So, but they don't necessarily need the WWE wrestlers. Every time they get one, it probably brings them a few fans. But I think they're doing such a great job at developing their in-house talent that it would be better at this point to let Adam Page become the huge superstar he's going to be than to keep bringing on more WWE guys.
Travis, a response?
This is a hard response because I am a big Chris Jericho fan. I think it was it 21 years ago today, actually, mm-hmm. of his WWE debut?
Yeah.
No, I'm a huge fan of Jericho. The way that he has redesigned himself so many times. I think the only other person, at least character-wise, to do it was Kane. But Jericho as a human being has redesigned himself so many times to so much success each time. It's like, he does something and he's so successful, you think, well, he can't be any more successful. Then he leaves and he comes back redesigned and he's successful again. Like, dude, this guy's a fucking genius. The Jericho Cruise and every, like, he's such a genius. I don't think there's one other wrestler on the planet that could do what Jericho has done for AEW.
And he's already redesigned himself twice since coming to AEW. He was the painmaker when he started, and now he's sort of a half-comedy villain now.
He's the demo god now.
He's the demo god, yeah.
So it's like he takes stuff, and he's so great at taking words and whether trademarking them or getting the phrase over or whatever. I mean, the list, stupid idiot. Like, I mean, come on, this is simple terms. It. Like, simple terms that we use in our daily daily lives that I call Adam, or I may call Brian, or anyone. And Jericho has made them humongous. This is making me sound like I like AEW, but I really like Chris Jericho. I do like AEW to an extent, but I really like Chris Jericho, and like he's so great. And like, I don't think I'm going to go above my time because I have more to say. I don't think someone like Orton, I don't think someone like Balor or AJ or, you know, I don't think those guys could have gone over there and done what Jericho did for AEW. I really think if Jericho wasn't there, I don't think they'd be on TNT. I really don't. I don't think they would be pulling the numbers they do. Jericho is very, very entertaining. Like I said, I did tune in to watch the Jericho Orange Cassidy debate because I was intrigued. You know, I really was. So that's their gold mine, and it's going to be very interesting in 2 years, 3 years when contracts are up, and you know, might have to make a call to the Saudis and be like, "Hey, need some money to get this guy back over here."
Anyone want to contribute?
I just want to add that Jericho telling Orange Cassidy that after he's faded away and he's working at Jamba Juice and Jericho's going to come in there and order a juice and then not tip him, that made the whole debate for me personally.
And that's the thing about Jericho. It's always the small details which makes him so great.
Yeah.
You know, ordering a Jamba Juice but not tipping. You know, is that small detail of not tipping, because maybe some writers who have come from the soap opera world would just stop at ordering at Jamba Juice. But Chris Jericho would say, I got to add the not tipping part, because that's what makes you a heel, not tipping. So, you know, I may sound pro AEW on this topic, but I do really think Jericho has done a lot. You know, I would never go on that boat. You know, I have no interest in being around 250 dudes and maybe three women stuck in the sea, but you know, hey, he makes money off of it. So great for him too.
Okay. So point AEW, got it.
Steve, we're going to go to the next question. And that's Sin City, Steve. You have personally stated that your biggest problem, or one of your biggest problems with WWE, is their lack of continuity. How does AEW maintain a better level of continuity over WWE?
So I think that continuity as a whole is something that is being addressed with AEW. The comment has been made with WWE that WWE fans don't remember things that happened early on, even in the same show. And I think that that's an issue because you're insulting the intelligence of your fans. And me being somebody that, you know, I look for things here and there. And of course, there are missteps along the line. I believe that the Dark Order is a great example of that. You know, constantly shifting the gimmick, changing what it is from one week to the next. But I think the thing that's very important to keep in mind throughout this entire process is that WWE has a 50, 60 plus year catalog behind them, yet they are not choosing to call back to certain things. AEW, yes, they're planning at times in the short term, but in terms of the, you know, the amount of missteps that they've had, or let's call it what it is, insulting their fans' intelligence, that is something that they do not do. I think that this actually goes back to one of the strong suits of AEW is fan engagement, and not just saying, oh, well, you're the WWE universe. I think that they show the fans how much they matter rather than tell them how much they matter to them. And, you know, AEW respects the fans accordingly. And as far as, you know, continuity from 1 week to the next, obviously we're going to microanalyze those things. I think that the key point is that how are things going to look 1 year from now, 6 months from now, 3 months from now, as far as the continuity and their storylines. And when you judge things on a bigger scale, on a macro level, I think that AEW is leaps and bounds ahead of WWE, largely because for the longest time, WWE had a 26-person writing team writing for each show. And whenever you have that many hands in the pot, you're going to have issues. I think that AEW has done things a very smart way by having a small council of bookers or, you know, storyline writers, however you want to phrase it. But the wrestlers themselves have been able to create and pitch storylines directly, and that allows them to take ownership of it. So obviously they have a vested interest individually in that storyline, so they're going to connect those dots for people.
Raven, response?
Steve talks so long, I forgot what the question was. But I want to go back to WWE talent coming to AEW. I'm not a big fan of that, only because they only have a two-hour show. I think it's taken away from some of the stars who have signed with AEW last year that I think should get a little bit more TV time. I think Sonny Kiss should be in the ring a lot more. I think some of the what's the twin to Jungle Boy?
Luchasaurus.
No, the guy looks like Jungle Boy, but it's not.
Yeah,
Marco Stunt.
No, not Marco.
Griff Garrison.
Griff.
But he's he's in AEW, but I don't think he's actually been on the main show more than once.
Yeah, but I think a lot of guys like that should be on because they're the guys who are the younger ones who, you know, because like it's like, all right, Zack Ryder gets released, but for the past 4 years, Zack Ryder's been nothing but a jobber in WWE. So it's almost like, hey, we're signing this jobber, we're just going to bring him by his new name, and he's getting TV time already. And it's like, well, what about like, you know, Sonny and Garrison and you know, maybe Hangman needs another drinking segment or something. Like, you know, if there was another TV show for them, then I think it's cool. But it's like, do you really want to start looking like WCW and buying all the leftovers? You know, hey, someone's contract is up. Let's pick them up. I'm like, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, but I guess that's their thing.
Anyone else?
Completely understandable. I'm going to step in and play moderator for a second. Do you have anything to throw out as far as continuity?
There is a big – sometimes WWE has a gap in continuity. You know, they – and I – so it's hard to say this year because we're playing storylines based around society. So a storyline may happen 1 week, but then 2 weeks later when TV's back, someone – test, and so they're gone for two more weeks, you know, and then maybe it takes 4 weeks to bring them back. Case in point, Mandy Otis and Sonya, you know,
right.
That disappeared for a reason. I'm sure you guys are smart enough to figure out the reason. And it was almost like 4 weeks, 5 weeks off of TV, and then it's like, oh, bam, Mandy and Sonya Otis are doing great. We're like, wait, where they been to be doing great? Like, you know, and I'm as far as continuity like that, I'm thinking like, okay, well, they've been off TV so long and you're just bringing them back out of the blue. At least maybe shoot something where they're coming out of the airport and Otis took her on vacation or something, or, you know, something just not to be like, hey, you fell asleep for 4 weeks and now they're still like, you know, but you know, I've heard people say that continuity at the top of the show and the bottom of the show and stuff like that. But it all goes back to what we've talked about prior, that it's Vince, and maybe something happened in between the first 45 minutes and hour number three where he was like, sorry, we did this 20 minutes into the show, but it's going to be totally different at the end of the show. And that doesn't happen often, but the times it happens, I know people harp on it and act like it's the end of the world, but it has happened. So I can't defend that it doesn't happen. But, you know, there are minor continuity issues, no worse than WWE 2K20, where it's just, you know, continuity issues galore.
All right, let's really quick go to the next.
Brian did. What's Brian did? By the way.
Yeah, thank you. I was about to say, was that supposed to be a jab at me, homie? Because I had nothing to do with that garbage.
No, I said you didn't work on it.
I know. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Calm down there, ACH.
Also, right, while we're talking about WWE's continuity, Crime Time never got their championship opportunity.
True.
Damn it.
You mean they never got the championship run? They had the championship opportunity, and it was actually Chris Jericho who went to Vince and said, "Hey, we should lose the titles to these two." And Vince was like, "No." and maybe back then, I forgot which SummerSlam. It was SummerSlam in LA. I forgot what year was that, but you can see how far back. I think that was 2007. So you can see how far back, how even Jericho was seeing that, you know, now's the time to do something different. And Vince was like, no. So,
all right, let's move on to the next question. Travis, WWE has invested time into developing a women's wrestling revolution. Are AEW fans delusional to think AEW's women division can compete with the WWE's division at all?
And my Tony Atlas laugh. No, AEW's women's division is nowhere near the WWE's women's division. I mean, they're like, I could probably take Dakota. See, I feel bad saying. What's the girl with Dakota? Raquel. Put Raquel versus Lacey Evans in a match. It'll still be better than most AEW women's matches, you know. But at the same point, you know, I feel bad because it goes back to where there is no performance center for them, so they can't they can't go and train at television, you know, where WWE has that access, you know. So it's hard to say, but no, their women's division doesn't come close to WWE or even NXT's. You know, it's like WWE is at the top of the game when it comes to women's wrestling in at least the United States. I don't watch Japan that much or Mexico, so I can't speak for other parts of the world, but at least in the United States, you know, no one can touch, you know, two belts, Banks and Bailey Dillstraps.
All right. Anyone want
and
to
Asuka with her amazing promos in Japanese.
Anyone want to rebuttal?
Get it, Woods.
Yo. So obviously you're judging WWE's women's roster now, right? You're conveniently forgetting Give Divas a Chance and the fact that they had a Divas title. And I mean, Gravy Bowl matches, that was just in our lifetimes, right? So with that all being said, it's taken a while for WWE to even develop or acknowledge the women's division. I mean, didn't the women's title disappear from Moolah in 85 to, what was it, Alundra Blaze, you know, for her to drop the title in WCW? You know, that's how little they thought of the division, you know, and whatever you want to attribute it to. At least they're acknowledging, at least AEW is acknowledging they have a women's division. Now, do I think it's awesome? Absolutely not, but it's got room to grow, right? I wish they were, and the AEW kind of falls into this trap that they assume that everybody knows who people are or whatever. I point to the Butcher and the Blade, right? It's the Butcher, it's the Blade. It's not telling anybody who they were, right? They have the one Japanese gal who dresses like Freddie Mercury, like a thick Freddie Mercury. Why does she dress like that? I don't know, right? But again, give them 60 years to develop a storyline or a division or whatever, we're going to be talking about that the same way. That's assuming that obviously AEW, Impact, or any other fledgling promotion, and anybody that isn't the WWE involved in wrestling is a fledgling promotion. Now, with that all being said, again, they just need time, right? And I think given the time, they could do some cool things.
Anyone
they
want
need
to,
Jimmy yeah. Jacobs. They need somebody to come in who can put some storylines together for these women. You know, right now they've got Dr. Britt Baker. She's fantastic, but they need, and maybe Tay Conti's going to be fantastic. And Anna Jay out there in her little Lone Ranger mask was exciting the other night. But they need somebody to come in and run the women's division. I don't think Kenny Omega is really putting the kind of effort into it that somebody doing that full time would.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So let's
point to WWE. I think that's a great point, Glenn. You know, having Kenny to oversee the women's division, he did that when he was wrestling in Japan with DDT. But at the same time, there wasn't as much of an emphasis needed on the women's division when he was overseeing it there. I think that everybody's expecting AEW just to pick up and fly. And the thing that I think that we all need to understand is that it is a work in progress. I mean, we're talking about a company that's been around for less than a year, that doesn't have a PC, that quite frankly works less than 100 dates a year. So if their competitors are not getting additional ring time on their own, then you've got to figure that a lot of their women's roster is going to be green just by default, by not getting in there and, you know, mixing it up, doing their thing. Because as we all know, house shows are a thing in the past.
What's for,
but as you said, they need time, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sadly, the AEW audience thinks this shit is just the greatest next to tomato soup. And it's like, give them time, you know, mm-hmm. because a year from now, 2 years from now, will they be the greatest? You know, and that's when it's going to matter most. It's going to matter most, not October 2020, but October 2021 and October 2022. That's when AEW, their ratings and their demos and everything else is going to matter the most. Right now, it's just a talking point for some journalist to spend 45 pages on and 45 minutes of a 50-minute podcast on to talk about and get the and then get mad when Twitter jumps on people. You know, it's like, let's really debate this in 2021 and 2022, you know, and then that's when it's really going to matter, because that's when talent contracts are up. That's when TV deal rights start to get renegotiated. You know, and then hopefully that's when Adam joins us in 2021 instead of going back to when Moolah and Alundra Blaze dropped the title back in 1983 or whatever year he went back to, he took us back to just now.
Well, let's go to Adam with the final question here. Adam, AEW was vocal in stressing they would be an all-inclusive company. How have they delivered on showcasing minorities so far?
Well, obviously, you know, Sunny Kiss, right? Sunny Kiss is if you put Sunny Kiss or Nyla Rose in front of Vince McMahon and told him what they were, I don't think you would essentially get anything of them. You look at what they did with Darren Young or Fred Roser, right? Being an openly gay person. And he kind of did that himself, you know, being out at the airport and trapped by TMZ to get a question out of him. And that's when he revealed it. But did they do anything in terms of, you know, promoting it or anything like that? I mean, Titus O'Neil does amazing, you know, he's a philanthropist, right? And, you know, none of that is mentioned on WWE TV. The most notable thing that he's been able to do is slide under the ring at the Saudi Blood Money show, right? So with that all being said, in terms of being inclusionary, right, what they, it's not just the fans, but it's also the wrestlers, right? In the sense that, you know, Sunny Kiss and Nyla Rose can be who they are. It's for the fans, you know, the sensory deprivation kits that they had for autistic, you know, people and what have you. Those are things that they've done to become inclusive. And, you know, it's not just a Finn Balor saying of, you know, Balor for everyone or whatever the case may be. It's actions. It's not, you know, a PR spin that they try to do on things or a duality deal. What Stephanie is a heel on and, you know, on TV and then, you know, hugging it up with kids in the next segment. Right. So that speaks to the continuity. That also speaks to, again, AEW is an inclusionary place, you know, and then going back to, you know, I don't think Matt Cardona or the Revival, I don't think they were damaged goods, right? Which, you know, many other of the WWE cast offs have been in historically, right? They, you know, Matt Cardona is somebody that built his following on himself, right? The same thing with Revival. And, you know, so it's a very different place, AEW, figuratively and literally, right? So I do think that AEW is more inclusionary than the WWE at this moment. Is it what I want to watch? Probably not, right? But the thing is, they are doing what they set out to do. You know, that was one of their mission statements. And to me, I think they're doing it.
Travis, response?
So, as far as, like, I think you could stand Sunny Kiss and Nyla Rose in front of Triple H, and NXT would possibly know what to do. Like I said, when people call it up, it's almost like their life starts over. You know, it's almost like they get called to a new promotion, you know. And I think a lot of people have to realize that. It's like, people are always going to get that chance through NXT first. And then, like, your life starts over and whatever happens, happens. But at least you're going to get a good 3 or 4 years in NXT. But at the same point, and I've brought this up to many people, how Sonya Deville is openly gay on Total Divas, but it's never brought up on WWE television, you know. And I kind of question why, because living in LA, working in television and so forth, the one thing you learn is you get the gay audience behind you, you're going to be very, very successful. And I think both companies are, I think AEW quicker than WWE, but I think both companies are trying to find the right way to get the gay audience behind them to make their company even bigger. You know, Sonya's been the grand marshal of the West Hollywood parade out here and so forth. And she's done a lot of work with Maria Menounos. And, you know, I think she's a fucking star, you know, but it's just weird how a show about WWE has her being openly gay, but yet the WWE does not touch that at all. You know, there was always a thing about the Finn Balor shirts, how he couldn't wear it in Saudi Arabia, you know, and so on. So, you know, there's something about that, that I wish, you know, I think in 2020 that, you know, it's kind of where that it's not, I'm going to say, I don't think it's accepted fully yet, you know. I don't think it's accepted fully with one company, and I think another company is trying to figure out how to fully get it accepted. Because I always questioned, there was a long period where Sonny Kiss was not on television. You know, he was only kept on YouTube, and I just wondered why, you know, and made me wonder, like, what's going on down there in that Southern TNT office, you know, in Southern Georgia, South Atlanta. So, but yeah, I think there's a market, a huge audience for both companies between Sonny and Nyla and Sonya Deville. And, you know, once both companies realize that, you know, it's okay to be who they are, then I think there's going to be a lot of money to be made by all three of those talents and more, you know.
Okay, let me open up anyone right now. Let's just do any topics, anything that you guys haven't hit on that you wanted to talk about. I'm going to give you guys about 5 minutes or so. People just start jumping in, and let's go for a free-for-all to finish it up.
Oh, thank you for letting me start, Matt. Like I said, I personally do not hate AEW with a passion. For the very few that know, I have contacted them to someone that is coming from the UFC. Because I thought that person may fare better over for AEW than elsewhere. I'm proud that, you know, the people who are in power are being successful. I've known the Bucks for a while, you know, past 3 years, I would see them weekly at the airport. Been a fan of Sky, you know, I tried to talk to him, you know, fairly regularly. I really think the big AEW WWE war was started by journalists. You know, I think if some of these journalists, you know, weren't the way they were, I think maybe fans could probably, they wouldn't be arguing as much each week, you know.
What journalists are you talking about? You've been mentioning these journalists. Man, who are you talking about?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's only really one, you know, there's maybe three journalists in wrestling that write shit, and then obviously everyone copies their stuff. That's Meltzer, Satin, and Mike at PWI. But for the most part, you have to realize we entered an era of a brand new company where you had the observer so much on the nuts of AEW, you know. But then at the same time, you had Ryan Satin get a gig for Fox talking about WWE. So that, you know, and he, I'm sure he really couldn't be, you know, anti-WWE on certain things as much as he wanted while he was getting that Fox paycheck. So it was almost like you divided, you know, you had Satin representing WWE, you had the Observer basically representing, you know, AEW. And I think that the fan base made their decision and split the sides. You know, it's like every Thursday at 1:05 in the afternoon, it's like, how many of these fans actually understand what demographics are, what ratings are, you know? But it's like, I think that the person, and it's just like maybe 0.1% of them understand it fully, but it is like 90% are all fighting on Twitter about it, you know? To where the point is like, you know, it's getting wrestlers involved. And I see a lot of wrestlers like, yo, like everyone needs to shut the fuck up about demos and ratings, because we're doing this for a living. We don't like, demos and ratings are for people in suits in corporate, you know, settings, you know, not for the talent to be fighting fans over on Twitter. So, so yeah, but you know, like, it's just not everything at AEW is my cup of tea. You know, it's like when I go to PWG by the third match, it's like, I'm worn out because I've seen everything. You know, and some of that audience, some of that style has crossed over into AEW. But at the same time, not everything in WWE is my cup of tea. I like the Boneyard match. I thought the Cena Wyatt WrestleMania thing was entertaining. I wouldn't say it was great, but, you know, entertaining to see them talk about some past stuff. But then there's a lot of stuff, you know. I know a lot of people before were mad about how Kofi was treated, but it's like you have to look at it from a business standpoint. If I'm bringing a product to Fox, and Fox says we want Lesnar as champ, I mean, what do you really do? What do you really do? But make Lesnar champ, you know? And it sucks that it happened to Kofi, and I don't think it had anything to do with his race. As many people that want to make it about his race, I think Daniel Bryan could have been in that same position. You know, it was just Fox wanted Lesnar champ because Lesnar's money, you know, and it was going to be what it was.
Anyone else want to finish up here?
I want to talk just quickly about, we didn't get into this, but what comparatively from AEW to WWE side, and I think of this more in the main roster, but the differences in finishes. You know, there's a lot more respect paid in the AEW side, I think, towards legitimate finishes, trying to tell a story by still doing finishes that aren't pissing people off. And like, oh, great, we have to like wait another week to find out how more fucked up this is getting with these finishes. You know, the Asuka Sasha Banks finishes, I'm just thinking of something in recent memory. I don't know. I see a drastic difference between that. I see AEW more of like trying to be mindful on a sports level of things too with their finishes, not trying to be too hokey or clearly just making a finish just to keep on a path of somewhere where I don't know. I just see the difference, and I thought that was something we didn't bring up yet. So the finishes. Pissed me off a lot of times on pay-per-views WWE does particularly. I don't know why it is the pay-per-views that get me more, but there's some finishes they do at those pay-per-views, especially during this coronavirus era, that have made me scratch my head, make me wonder what in the fuck are they thinking?
Yeah, I agree. That's a very good point, the finishes that you brought up, Jed. Like when AEW books a match, like they've got the benefit of the doubt. They've done it plenty of times where I know that I'm gonna come away from that match with a winner and a loser.
Right.
You know, they don't do the bullshit finishes on their television, and definitely not on their pay-per-views that they're charging, you know, $60 for. Right. So you're right. Like, that is a huge distinction between their products. Like, they will not book a match unless they have a finish in mind, where it seems like in WWE, most likely due to the scattershot nature of their storytelling and booking, like, they'll book a match without having any idea. Insofar as we'll figure out who's going to go over later, until the day of, and then you get like that Oscar finish or just something that is just so disrespectful to the audience. Like, don't, if you don't want any of these people to lose, you're writing this shit. Don't book the match, you know? So yeah, I agree. That's the finish situation is, I mean, they've had one DQ finish in AEW, and that was during an Iron Man match. That's it. Everything else, you get a winner, you get a loser, you know? And it's okay, because it's a simulated sport. You know, I love my Lakers, but I go into every game knowing, I'm hoping that they win, but I know there's just as, you know, good a chance that they lose. Like, that's just the nature of it. And you can tell stories, you know, branching out of either or. You know what I mean? There's a story for the loser as much as there's a story for the winner. So, yeah.
But that's always been WWE's issue, because, I mean, I think one of the most memorable ones was Ryback and CM Punk in Hell in a Cell. You know, you had undefeated Ryback, but everyone knew where Punk was going the next month, and there was a Hell in a Cell. So, or, you know, I'm sure one of the Steves is willing to bring up this past Monday with three DQ finishes in the first 90 minutes. You know, And if that's AEW's deal, I think WWE does it to an extent because they have so much television to produce in a week. They're like, we can do this fuck shit on Sunday, and because we're going to make everyone happy by Friday or so like that. But at the same point, this is where I'm saying it's WWE, because when has there ever been a fuck finish in NXT? You know, I'm sure there has been. Not saying there hasn't been. But you know,
you're right though. It's definitely a lot less than the main.
You would have to sit and think for a moment about the last time there's been a fuck finish in NXT. Where, like I said, you know, I've seen on Twitter about, you know, the three DQs on Raw this past week in the first, you know, 90 minutes of the show. So, you know, it's one of those things, and obviously it's that road that leads back to the same start path of. It's one person who decides it, and we all know because we've talked about that earlier in this episode. So,
all right. I have some closing thoughts here. Sorry to jump in on you there, Raven. First off, thank you so much, guys, for including me in this panel here or in the debate. And I appreciate if everyone that listens would check out my podcast, Mature Audiences Mayhem. There's a great interview with Jericho on there, with Chris Bay, with Katie Forbes, RVD, some other great wrestlers, along with a bunch of porn stars. So there's something for everybody on there. I just want to say about the state of the industry, because I kind of thought about this when I was asked to be on it. They say the only thing that's constant in life is change. And that's really true. No matter how great of a product that you have, or a television show that you have, eventually someone is going to come along and bring something better. It's just the way things are. And then there are always going to be holdouts who don't want or aren't ready for what's better. You know, right now in Kansas, there's some guy that's sitting around saying, "Ha, I don't need your fancy schmancy Netflix. I've got what I need. I got VHS, baby. I got tapes." And then, you know, over in Quaker country in Pennsylvania, there's somebody that's going like, "Ha, look at you stupid idiots putting gasoline in your cars. You need to find a gas station. I just need to find oats for my horse and buggy that I've got," you know. And then somewhere in LA, there's Raven, or on an island in the Pacific, there's somebody that still watches WWE every minute of it all the way through and is saying, "Well, look, I don't need your silly wrestlers with passion. I don't need faster paced action. I don't need to see wrestlers who are more entertaining and funny because they're not reading every single word from a script. No, what I want is, like, you know, a wrist lock. I want an arm bar and a wrist lock. And I want 3 hours of wrist lock and arm bar. And I get that from WWE. So I don't need to check out what's new because I'm already getting what I want." And that's great. But reality is that every once in a while something new comes and it's better. And that's AEW. They're just better overall of a product from an entertainment standpoint than WWE is right now. That's AEW.
Yeah, you know what? It's crazy. One thing that AEW does do is develop talent more. You know, historically, Vince McMahon has essentially cherry-picked from, you know, he cherry-picked Hogan from the AWA and Piper from Portland and Flair and what have you, right? And the same kind of iteration is happening, you know. Bryan Danielson AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, they were stars, you know, even though it was a smaller scale than what the WWE is. I mean, obviously, everything is smaller scale to what the WWE is at any point in time. But with that all being said, is they're creating stars. Like, I'm excited for Butcher and the Blade and what they're going to do. Like, they look like a tag team. One of the best WWE-type programming that I thought they put together was NXT UK. And I'm sad that it's in a precarious position. But, I mean, my dream match in terms of tag teams would be Butcher and the Blade versus Mustache Mountain. But again, that's my type of wrestling. That's not Vince's, right? And Vince has long since not catered to fans, right? We were kind of the afterthought, kind of paying to be glorified extras or not extras at all, right? So with that all being said, you know, there's so many, you know, as a podcaster myself, you guys know, there's so many kind of reservations for people's attention in terms of any sort of media, streaming services, YouTube, just on YouTube, your YouTube Digest has like 80 different things that you could be watching rather than anything, right? So with that all being said, the fact that Vince has kind of just stayed par course and like, this is my way, whatever, I don't give a damn. I think AEW, Impact Wrestling, New Japan, they need to exist. You know, to say like a Matt Cardona or The Revival or Gallows and Anderson, wherever they may go, right, to say that, oh, in your mid-30s or late-30s, your career is over because you're not with the WWE anymore. I think that's a horrible thing, you know. So to go back to, like, the whole thing about them getting WWE cast-offs, well, Vince has done it for decades, literally decades, picture-pick and whatever. So I'm excited to see what AEW will look like in 2022 and going forward. You know, but I'm glad that AEW exists because, again, you're going to see the best of Matt Cardona, what you didn't see 8 years ago when we were, none other than The Rock, right? Was there in Madison Square Garden and they were planning for Zack Ryder, right? So now we're going to get to see Zack Ryder in his truest form, right? So I think AEW needs to exist. I think all, you know, places need to exist because it's places for our friends and people that we like to ply their trade. And guess what? The true mark of AEW will be when contracts come up 3 years from now or 2 years from now, wherever we stand, and WWE is cherry-picking AEW guys and girls to go to NXT. And I think that's when we're going to see the real legacy of AEW.
That's good. I think we're going to... I think
WWF always had television hours to fill. That's why they were cherry picking talent. My only issue with AEW picking up so many, or not so many, but WWE released talent is that I just feel, and this is pro AEW, I feel that there's a lot of AEW talent that I think needs a little bit more TV time that I would like to see on TV time, and not just the guy who played Zack Ryder 2 months ago on WrestleMania weekends. Like, you know, I like Jurassic Express. You know, I think Marco Stunt is a joke, but I like the little threesome they have there. And it's like, are they going to get less TV time now that you know, Zack Ryder is there and the Revival and so far? And that's my only thing. Like I said, if AEW gets another TV deal and at least 1 hour of extra TV, then okay, that's fine. But I think right now, let's focus. I think they should just focus on their stars that they signed at the beginning.
Well, there you have
the
it,
guys
folks.
The guys are always going to come in.
I've got to wrap it up here, but I appreciate everyone for participating. You guys made really good points. I don't think that anyone's opinion here on the panel has changed. But the biggest, I think, take that everyone has is that it's really hard right now to give it an answer. Is this product better than the other product? And it's going to take us years to find out, but hopefully we'll get to see both AEW and WWE continue to grow. And that's the best scenario for everyone, because as much as everyone wants to make it a war, the reality is kind of what Adam said, and that is, these are people's lives and jobs, and we want to see them succeed as such. So thank you guys very much, and thank you everyone for listening, and we hope to have you download, subscribe, listen, and share with all your friends everything from the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Everyone, have a great rest of your day.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.